Hello, my name is Gabrielle Mottola, and welcome to the Stranger Curiosity Podcast. Welcome to the sixth episode of Stranger Curiosity. Today is Wednesday, July 1st in the year 2020. For context, this podcast was recorded just this past Saturday on June 27th. My guest is somebody I was introduced to in Iceland back in 2013 when I traveled there to make the book An Equal Difference, which is a collection of essays based on conversations I had, portraits, and landscapes. It wasn't the landscapes that drew me to Iceland, it was the people, of course. But okay, to be fair, I did stick around for the landscapes too. I wanted to talk to Icelanders and find out why it was being reported that Iceland had greater gender equality, green energy, they were jailing their bankers for the crash in 2008. I mean, was this all just spin? What was spin? More importantly, what was life really like for people in Iceland? I mean, were people just better? Spoiler alert, no. And no society is perfect. But Iceland does have some very interesting ideas, which seem to be born out of their unique history, circumstances, and geographical position on the globe. It's my hope that we will take inspiration for our societies from these ideas. One person's ideas that I came across, which I absolutely fell in love with and wanted to share most of all, come from my guest today. Margrét Paula Ólafsdóttir, or Magapala as she's known, is an Icelandic pioneer pedagogue, educator, and philanthropist. She's a kindergarten and elementary teacher with further studies in school management, an MED in pedagogy and education, and an MBA degree in business administration. Magapala has written numerous books and articles on gender equality, pedagogy, and education for both parents and academics. She's also well known as a consultant, lecturer, and analyst, and has been granted numerous awards and recognition for her work, including the Knight's Cross of the Icelandic Order of the Falcon from the President of Iceland for innovation in education. This is a conversation about observation and understanding and how we can do better for our children, ourselves, and for our society, given access to a greater imbalance as human beings. We tend to conflate equality with sameness instead of seeing it as a respect for differences and the seeking of balance within each of us. Bear in mind that the opinions and observations about child development, particularly that you're about to hear, are based on more than 30 years of experience and observation. But please don't stop with this podcast. Get curious and check the show notes for links, and please do read more. Consider this to be only a very small introduction. We mentioned early on in the podcast that the countries at the moment that are being led by women seem to be doing much better in the corona crisis than the countries that are being led by men. And this is not to say that there are no great male leaders, and this is not a competition, but it's an observation rather to be made, and we're not the only ones noticing it. And so what does it say and what can we learn from it? Please do me and yourself a favor. If you listen beyond this point, make sure you listen to at least the 24-minute mark. There's a lot of setup in this talk. There's a lot of history to the context of the conversation that we're having. And I will say for the clarity of awareness that we are tending to speak in binary language for the purposes of discussing how society and gender roles have been constructed up until now. Despite advances, enlightenment, and greater acceptance and understanding, we are still operating in a world which largely thinks of us in terms of a binary. And for the most part, our schools are still in version 1.0. What might school 2.0 look like, and a brighter, more balanced future for all of us? I hope this talk leaves you feeling as hopeful as it did me. I'd also like to mention that we did talk about the pandemic and the fact that lots of parents and children in the UK, especially recently, had the schools open for a four-week period after not having been for the better part of 3 months. I mean, this wasn't all the schools, but nonetheless, after 3 months of being homeschooled, children were suddenly put back into a 2 to 3 day a week school system. I wanted to talk with Magapala about what it's been like for parents on top of their working lives to be homeschooling children, for the children, the disruption to their routines, and what parents could be doing for themselves and their children given how difficult this time is. If you have any questions for Magapala, please write to me at strangers@gabriellemottola.com, and I'll make sure she gets those questions, and I'll do my best to make sure you get a response. So please sit back or stand up or walk or whatever it is you're doing at the moment, and allow me to introduce you to Magapala Ólafsdóttir.
Are we there?
We're in.
Wow. Wow, think about it. Where are you, my friend?
I am in Shepherd's Bush in London. And where are you?
Oh, I'm home.
Ah.
Yes, I'm home at Gilsbakki.
Oh, Iceland.
And Lily and I, we were just discussing with our friend from Bristol that, yeah, that maybe a friend from UK will come over maybe at some similar time as you.
How exciting.
So I think people in Britain, they are, yeah, in depression. This is a horrible situation.
We're beside ourselves. I mean, our leadership is non-existent. They're just not sending any kind of clear message. They're not taking responsibility. It's almost like Boris Johnson and his cohorts missed the memo on leadership when they took their positions. I think they'd probably be happier as actors.
But have you noticed that the state led by female, by women, led by women, they are in a way doing better, I think.
Like New Zealand, Scotland, Iceland.
Yeah, yeah.
Where else?
Well, then what you are saying already is showing you something. I think Denmark, Germany, except for the last outbreak, I think women are more able to build trust in a society. We are taking care of others. We are taking care of babies. We are taking care of the sick people. We are simply much more qualified in all social skills. You know, you could say, is it our genes? Is it our DNA? Or is it the social upbringing we have been having? Is it the tendency in childhood for girls to be more talk active, to be more playful in all social games? Maybe it doesn't matter what it is, but at least we are seeing so many symbols of women being more able of building trust, sympathy, and collecting people, building teams. Why the guys, just when they are, you know, they are 2 years old, then you can see them play differently. They are playing in big flocks with one big leader and so on. When the girls are role playing with different roles, always checking on each other, always fine tuning their roles, you know. And if somebody is not happy, they are working on it and they are doing something. They are always building up a team. While the boys are just having this one question, they are 2 years old, and who's the leader? And then they will follow the leader.
That's natural from like, because like I agree with you, not to put you on the spot. I do want to just talk to you a bit about your history, your career. I mean, your thoughts to me are really important based on everything that you've done and built in your time and seen and observed in children, which has led you to create this schooling system. I mean, before we jump into that, I just want to, just for people who don't know you and don't know our relationship, just talk quickly about how we met. We met back in Iceland in 2013, and we stood in the schoolyard of one of your schools in by the airport, wasn't it? It was over by, where was it?
Oh, yes. Okay, it was the one closest to the airport because I was going to the west. We are having nurseries and schools all over Iceland. So I could squeeze you in when I got this email of seeing a person coming over with her camera to find out why women are strong in Iceland, why we have been able to rebuild the country after the huge collapse, etc., etc.
Yeah, and I stood there that day in the wind when we talked for the first time and when you gave me a ride.
It was such a windy day.
It was. I had a reflector. It was hysterical. I mean, it was hard to hold on in all senses, like the wind, the conversation, the ideas. And yeah, so I came to visit you, and I came to Iceland, and you were there, and I photographed you, and we spoke for about 45 minutes, and you were part of this portrait project I was doing. I was trying to find out why women in Iceland were doing so well, why Iceland was leading the world, according to the World Economic Forum and all sorts of different political, educational, socioeconomic matrices. And I wanted to see what it was like on the ground. And then I discovered your school, the Hjalli. How do you pronounce it? Hjalli.
Hjalli, and then you would say the Hjalli model, but in Icelandic we say Hjalla stefnan. As my observations led me to in fact, a holistic approach, almost a life philosophy built on my observation, so it ended as a model.
And you began in kindergarten, right? Like you began as a kindergarten teacher.
Yeah, or a nursery.
Nursery teacher. That's what I mean.
Yeah. And but our model, we have been using it now from 1 year old up to 16 years old children, and children are children. And in a way, we all are children in our hearts. We are just trying to hide it. We're always trying to play the game. I'm grown up. But that's why it's so wonderful to observe life through children. They are not hiding. They are not trying to bluff and be somebody else.
This idea of bluffing and trying to be somebody else is what I feel like I'm experiencing in government in the UK at the moment. I mean, generally, and maybe this is one of the differences in leadership, that in governments led by women, in governments led by men, there seems to be this idea of fronting or bluffing or knowing it all.
Yeah. And I mentioned to you that nations led by women are somehow building up more trust and more belief that people are telling the truth. All the party games for grown-ups, you know, when they are trying to hide and bluff, and they do not, you know, just come forward as they are, just like a child would do. Men are better in these games because they are fighting for leadership. They are fighting to be the guy that the whole group will follow, and so on, as you say, from a year of 2 years old. But the girls are always in their communication. It's hard to bluff. It's really hard to do it when you are always cooperating, always discussing, always fine-tuning everything that is happening. So women, they tend to be more direct. They tend to be more honest in a way, except when they are learning all the party games from the big boys.
Can you speak more about that? What do you mean? When they're kids? What happens then?
I mean, when the girls are, well, they are always dealing with the reality of life. They are so young when they have discovered how women should behave, or what is girlish and what is not girlish. And today they are still seeing their mothers taking care of the family, taking care of the children, taking care of the communication in the home. They are taking care of the welfare of the whole family. And the family limited is a huge foundation. Every family is a strong entity. And the mother, she is controlling the feeling of everybody. The boys, most of them are not seeing their father so active in this role. And they are having a vague idea of how they should be when they are grown up, because they are not seeing their fathers at work or being there with them or something like that. And they are always playing solidarity games. They are so young when they see life as a competition. When a guy needs to fight to be the leader, but then the whole group of boys will follow him, stand by him, more or less, and they are making rules, and then they just play by the book.
Yeah, this idea of competition versus cooperation.
Yeah, because, and as I said before, maybe the DNA, maybe our genes, maybe our upbringing, maybe our role models. I mean, whatever. Sometimes I think it doesn't matter. But we have to look at the consequences. What does this mean? And the girls, everything about fine-tuning, cooperation, they are feeling the feelings of others all the time because it's needed to be successful in the games of girls. You need to be so sensitive. You need to be able to read the atmosphere to come in and be there.
Yeah, and the empathy.
Yeah, we will do it and we continue doing it. While the boys, if you know the rules, if you know who's the leader, and if you can play by the book, you're just good to go.
What strikes me, it does. I mean, when I came to Iceland, started studying, you know, the way, well, certainly, I mean, one of the major discoveries for me going to Iceland and getting inside the country and spending time there was discovering your model, your pedagogic model, and like thinking about the way that we are raised in school and in society as boys and girls and how we have these natural tendencies. I think you're right. It doesn't matter how it happens, but what struck me and what strikes me in the world is that we are out of balance with the respect and the way that we integrate the differences, the cooperation versus the competition. Right now, it feels like, a lot of the countries being led by men are incredibly out of balance, where it is all about competition.
Yeah.
And it is a leader. It is one person who is seen as the leader and is the head of the country and is moving in a direction. And then without having this cooperation and these constant conversations that maybe are happening in leaderships that are being led, you know, governments that are being led by women. And what I found was that we can't have one without the other. We need a balance, or else with men, we move in one direction forever as like a missile. Yeah. Or an arrow. And with women, with this cooperation, we would move in a circle forever with no forward movement. And so I thought, I had this image when I finished the book and published it, that we together form an arrow and a circle, which is a compass, which is with the both of us as a direction, and the integration of these two fields, and understanding that we do have differences, but also supporting those differences and helping us grow as and actualize into fuller human beings is the idea behind your school.
Oh, yes, my God, now I'm exploding. I need to discuss so many things.
It's hard to talk about this in a linear fashion. Yeah. We'll just keep circling back.
Okay. First, I need to mention with the guys, you can see it with young boys, they are so often afraid to show their cards. Because if they are having some feelings, if something is happening, not quite by the book, or something that might weaken their status in the group, they do not dare to do it. They are keeping their cards close. But for the girls in their games, if they are always keeping their cards, not showing, then they will not be read in the atmosphere, and then they will not fit in. They have to give. They have to be honest about, well, a lot of things, because this is so intense and so emotional. So for the leaders of the world, being trained as a woman or a man, you know, I'm saying, notice, being trained in these two roles, for the men, they will still have the experience of being afraid of showing their cards. A woman leading the country, she is still having the experience from childhood You need to show your emotions. You need to give something to, in order to gain something. So they are still fighting the experience they had when they were 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, Gabi. Think about it. This is still part of their work. Really few men dare to leave and find new experience and giving up part of this masculine role and how to play it by the book. But many women have been adoring the boys, adoring the men, the male-dominated society. So they are playing the role of men. If they are getting some good position, and many of them believe that they need to behave like the boys in order to build a career. It's like they are, you know, putting on the man's suit, but, you know, a little different version.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole lean in thing.
Yeah, and then...
Part of it, at least.
Exactly. And I so often doubt it. I have been working in a traditional women's field all my life, with children, with young people, with schools, with nurseries, and a big part of my ideology is also to support the young women coming to work and to support the young women bringing their babies and children to nurseries and schools. So I have been in this field. I have never wanted to play the game of the guys. I don't want to play the game. And all those party plays, as I call it, party games. But we are still, so many women, we are still downgrading our fields. We are downgrading working in a nursery, downgrading being a nurse in a hospital, you know. We are still thinking that equality is getting to the men's field. We both know that is rubbish.
Absolutely.
Now I'm coming to the balance. But this is exactly what you did all those years ago in the wind in Iceland. I started to talk and you said, "Ah, really? And can you explain it and tell me more about it?" But the balance, it's all about the balance, like you said. And the balance is not coming from mixing men and women together at the same time, in the same job or same role or same room or whatever. We need the balance inside, Gabi. That's the balance we need. And we need to start with children so early, because that's when experience is doing the most for their brain. And secondly, did you know that all the values in life is formed when you are 5 to 6 years old? The value of...
Formative years.
You know.
I mean, I've heard that, which is,
I must have told you.
You must have. I mean, I've learned quite a lot since I met you 7 years ago. And actually, one of the first things I thought as you dropped me off, you kindly gave me a ride to my next destination. I thought, oh my God, please, please, please do podcasts for parents. Please, can we talk more about how to support parents supporting the balance in their children? Because from what it seems to me in my experience and what it seems from studying, you know, your system and the schooling in Iceland, it's like parents can't be discordant with schools, and schools can't be discordant with parents, and society can't be discordant with either two. This triad of balance, it has to be reinforced. So if you have a school that supports the balance in children, uh-huh, but you have parents who don't, they fight against each other. If you have a society, which we do that doesn't support the balance within people and wants to categorize them and put them into separate boxes,
yeah,
we fight against that with our parents and or schools support, yeah. you know, so yeah. we're not working together as a society, parents, no. children, schools, governments, educational institutions to help us as individuals achieve this balance so that we, yeah.
Yeah. And that's because the lack of knowledge, the lack of understanding, and that is because of the denial of the gender roles. Because we believe that, yeah, we believe that the gender roles doesn't matter. And at the same time, we believe that you cannot do anything that might disturb the old gender roles. It's so unbelievable that we are in denial. It's not like we are hiding all the information about the gender roles, how they are formed, how we are creating this imbalance. Can I say imbalance?
Yeah, lack you of balance. Can.
Yeah, okay, thank you. We are making it. We are making the imbalance constantly, but in denial. So I have been in a way for 30 years, I have been like a detective, observing what is going on, observing and discovering the imbalance and how we make it with 1 year old, two years old, 3 years old, 4 years old children. We are making this imbalance gradually, step by step, because we don't want anything to change, because we don't want something to mix, to yeah, a lot of people even still are afraid deep down that if you are giving boys and girls, you know, a little different experience than they are having usually, they even think that you are messing with their sexuality. Like if you want to work on the imbalance in this important time, you will give boys and girls similar experience. You will give boys the opportunity of being a nice person, playing maybe with nail polish. You are giving them extra training in taking care of the younger boys. You will give them extra training in caring and saying beautiful words to each other, you know, and cuddle. But a lot of people, they are so afraid that we are messing with their masculinity and messing even with their sexuality. Do you follow me?
I totally follow you. And I think that a lot of people get very confused between gender and sexuality and sex in terms of like nature, sex is humans. So we come out with uteruses or testicles. Of course, there's intersex, you know, but then humans create gender, male, female gender, and assign those roles to people who fall into the sex categories. Yeah. And of course, you know, and this is how our society is built and has developed, and those roles work and function in a certain way. And one of the interesting things I discovered about the history of Iceland when I came over was the seafaring aspect of it, and how naturally, because you were a ship-to-shore community, you had to have more balance in communication between men and women, because the women would be at home running everything, the schools, the banks, everything, and the men, most of the men would be out at sea, fishing.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that's,
I mean,
that's our old roles, and also I still think that it might influence Iceland, that when it was populated 874 to be precise, many really strong women sailed to Iceland on their own with their own team, and they were really successful, and they took land and built up great farms, and they build up their own societies. So that's also part of our history.
Yeah, so, and also if if Vikings weren't all male.
If they were...
Vikings, I heard, if you were going to battle, if you were a village going to battle, you would take all the able-bodied people.
Yeah.
You wouldn't pick and choose men and women. You'd take the biggest humans you had that could fight.
Everybody and the strongest.
Yep.
Of course. And to survive in this harsh landscape and in this nature, I mean, we have not been having war in Iceland ever, but we have been in a war with nature always. We needed everybody. We needed everybody to come forward with what they could do. And also many women, they went to sea and were even leading the team on the boat. And I think the harshness of the nature in Iceland helped us to put everybody forward. We needed everything and everybody. But the balance we need today, we need the girls and the women. We need to continue by accepting our speciality, all our social qualities, all our caring, all our emotions, all our empathy with others and so on and so on. But at the same time, we need to have our inner strength and self-value, and we need more experience of individual qualities. That's why you can come to our nursery and you would see girls on their own training self-worth and strength by jumping off table and screaming and doing something really hard to put your face in ice cold water and scream, I can do it. I can do everything,
I remember walking in just to give some people who wouldn't understand that I've seen this myself. I walked into one of your classrooms to make some pictures, and there was a classroom full of young girls, maybe no more than 8 or 9, and they were all lining up to jump off tables onto crash mats with teachers and slide down tables. And the energy in the room, I felt like I was in a room with a lot of little boys, as I called it, that energy was very, and then I went next door and there was like, all the boys were playing dress up and running around in capes. And there were some boys that were learning to sew on machines.
Yeah.
And they didn't, the energy felt very different than what I would have expected to walk into a classroom full of girls or boys. And then there was another time when I came and dancing was happening and the girls and the boys were dancing together.
Yeah.
And I know from reading about your schools and from talking to you, because we've kept in touch over the years, obviously. I know that you train, you offer, as you say, this training, encouraging children to be who they are, but also to provide them with training that they might not normally or naturally come to in all gender qualities, so that they can best choose which ones that they want instead of giving a choice.
Training all qualities, all the skills they can have. And it's so important to do it early because experience is everything. And if you're not, when you are in certain age, if you're not experiencing how to be really socially qualified, how to be nice, how to take care of others, how to say beautiful words, how to be sensitive. If you do not have this experience, if you are more or less in the traditional old roles of a man or a boy, then it will not be there for you when you need it. And there is one more thing I need to add. When kids are less than 2 years old, they are 18 months to 24 months, when they know exactly what it means to be a girl or a boy in a really traditional way. I mean, they're only a few months old babies that have started to tag people and activities and things as male and female. And they are so traditional about the gender roles. They're so traditional until the age of 6, 7, but they will probably never be as traditional again. And that's why they are not getting the experience. The girls are afraid of boyish activities because that might undermine their gender role. When they're 8, 9, or 10 years old, they're not afraid of it anymore. But at this age, it is so important for them to have all kinds of experience. Otherwise, they themselves, they will exclude what is not for their correct role. Are you still with me?
I am. I'm thinking, I mean, I can only map this to my experience, not having been, not having had the experience of seeing this firsthand constantly through other children the way that you have. So I take what you say, and then I sort of think through my life, and I think through the children that I know. And I think back to myself at 5. I was playing with boys in a field in New Jersey catching frogs. That was me at 5. And my best friend was a 13-year-old girl. I was playing music in the school orchestra with her. And, you know, by the time I was 9, I was skateboarding with boys, but my best friends were girls. So I feel like in my life, I've had this balance where I, and what's coming, you know, I'm thinking about my godchildren. And when the youngest was up until about the age of, maybe like when she could speak up until about the age of 2 or 3, she would proclaim that she was a boy. She would come, you know, she would dress very much like that. And then one day she discovered pink, and that was it. And then everything was pink, 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 pink. the eldest never really had a proclivity either way. And, you know, it's just interesting to see, you know, I've seen her completely take the gender role and adapt it for herself and hold it really, you know, closely to her.
Yeah, that's the majority of girls, and majority of boys do the same. And you will see it when they are having a free play, they will always go to their gender stereotypical games, and you will see exactly what I've been talking about. And that's why we are having these extra sessions to give them compensation, to give them more experience in what they do not include in their own games. You know, when they're, and they are playing, girls are, they are seeking to play together, boys are seeking other boys. That's for the majority. You were skateboarding with the boys, but at the age of 5, probably if you would play with the boys and be really boyish, as the kids will label you, probably they might, you will be considered not as a real girl. You would be like a tomboy.
That's what I was. That's what they called me.
Yeah. And then I was not a traditional girl. And I somehow felt that my femininity was taken away from me. Because I loved being really active, doing strange things, and not interested in so many of the traditional girlish things. I also remember boys, and I still see them today, 4 or 5 years old. And if they are not masculine and if they are not a boyish enough, they will also lose their self-worth as a boy. They will be, you know, sissies or something like that, girlish boys.
Yeah, all the worst put downs are all related to female genitalia, for a boy, the worst thing you can be called is a girl.
Yeah, being a pussy and whatever it is.
Yep.
And by this, we are still strengthening the old roles by saying, if you are really active, if you're climbing trees, if you're skateboarding with boys, okay, you are not a real girl. You're a tomboy.
Yeah.
And we are more and more narrowing the roles. And if a boy is caring, calm, interested in reading and drawing and singing and something like that, he is not a real boy. And the question I often get with my single-sex groups in nurseries and schools, people are saying, but what about the soft boys? What about my boy? He always wanted to play with the girls. But do you really want your boy just been put in the group of girls because he was not accepted as a real boy, just because he was well behaved, because he was interested in books and reading and stories and songs? Are we going to accept it? I just need to tell you the miracle I saw when I tried single sex with 2, 3, 4, 5 years old children for the first time for 30 years.
Explain first what single sex is for people who don't know. So the classrooms are separate.
Or single gendered.
Yeah.
I mean, having boys in their own department next to another department with only girls. Of course, meeting every day in some activities, training, like you said, in dancing, training, communication, doing something together for real. But a big part of the day, just boys in the all boys department, just girls in the all girls department.
And I think it's really, really important that people understand the reason that's done is because there's a lot of competition for attention created when you mix boys and girls together. And so nobody gets the attention, or the people who shout the loudest get the attention. So that's what the separation is, in order to give the best attention and also to create a more secure sense and yes, to be able to pay attention.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so please tell me about this experiment.
Yeah. No, I first need to add that we are having school clothes, comfy and cheap clothes, unisex, so they don't need to fight and train competition over the brands their parents are able to pay and so on. And we are not having any display on the walls. I mean, everything is gender neutral, not only the clothes, but everywhere on the walls, and it's all gender neutral. The staff is also wearing gender neutral clothes, and all our toys is open-ended play material. So we are not having any traditional toys. So we have taken so much of the gender bias out of our department. But when the last part came into the model, and that was to have just girls for a big part of the day and then only boys, the difference I saw in the first days it was unbelievable. I mean, the girls didn't use the blocks for the first days because they were always seeing blocks as something for boys. And they were not choosing the activity room where you could be jumping and building and being really physical. It took them sometimes just seeing it empty to discover, so we can maybe do something in this. And I saw them change. I saw them being more active. I saw them trying out new roles that they didn't do before because the boys were there. And I saw the same miracle with the boys. All of a sudden, when the girls were not the best in singing, when we are opening the day with a song or something like that, all of a sudden the boys started to sing. It was maybe a little different. They wanted more active songs with a lot of movements and so on. And they were happy with one verse of a song, while the girls had 3 or 4 verses. And they started to help each other out. They started to talk much more. All the changes I saw just when the other gender was not there to take the role, was not there to be a role model of a boyish or girlish thingy. It was unbelievable. It was like a miracle for me.
But that makes sense because I think we have balance in us that we're born with, but we're trained out of it.
Yes. We are making men, we are making women instead of giving the balance inside.
Yeah, instead of making humans who are, you know, capable of both, really. I mean, sure, there's preferences and differences, and that's a spectrum for all all human creatures. All humans are on a spectrum. But what I really understood from your model is that, you know, you're while people are developing their confidence at such critical ages, you're giving them opportunities to have more experiences in areas that they may step aside for, because they think that belongs to some other group that's not them.
Exactly. Yeah. Because life is like a table with everything. You can go around the table. You can choose what you think is interesting from this table. You can make experiments and so on. If you just have tried it out, if you believe that everything is for you, and you need to learn it before the age of six. So if you're not learning it, if your parents, if the home, if the nurseries, if the society as a whole, if Disney, shall we discuss Disney?
We don't have time to get into Disney.
No.
We should, though. We do have time. This is kind of a deep dive format on this podcast anyway. We could. You got another hour?
Disney. If we would all be rowing towards the same goal, if we would have the knowledge, and if we would not be so afraid. And this strange thing, people we are all in denial, but like the gender role is formed when they're 2 years old. But the sexuality is formed, you know, maybe 5-6 years old. But a 2 years old child can feel that they are not in the right body. Sometimes they feel that they are envying the other gender of what they are doing. So sometimes the feeling of not being a girl or not being a boy, it can relate to limited experience. Some girls, they think it's boring always just being doing girlish things. And then they want the role of a boy. But they are not wanting something in between. They do not have the type of thinking until they are probably 6, 7, 8 years old. Then at last they have the type of thinking, this more abstract thinking, that they can say, well, maybe I'm not feeling quite like a boy, but I'm not a girl either. I'm somewhere in between. They cannot do it in the important years.
I get that. So, yeah, the binary. Yeah. And then the frontal lobe takes even longer to develop.
So it's only black or white, a girl or a boy. And we have had a transgender child born as a girl being a boy. And this child was, well, the parents were worried when we or my model took over this nursery. The parents had accepted for her to use a boy's name and have boy's clothes and so on. And they were really worried. What will happen? I mean, shall this child, this person, be with girls or boys? And I said, let the child choose and take a day in the boys department and then with girls. And this child came home and said to the parents, you know, this is all the same. They're all doing the same. But the boys are a little bit more noisy, so I'm going to be with the girls. So the child was with the girls for the whole winter, using the boy's name and everything. And then the staff started to be a little nervous. What are we going to say if the girls say, why is he with us. And I said to the team, my wonderful friends, number one, probably the girls will never ask. Number two, if they ask why he is with them, then you will just answer and tell the truth, like you shall always do with children. Just tell the truth and say, oh, this he was born as a girl, but he felt more like a boy. So he decided with his parents that he would be a boy. And then the girls would simply say, uh-huh. Life is so simple in this clear, clear mind of children. Or shall I say clear minds of children?
Yeah.
They are having this sharp, simple, focused and transparent and clear, like a streaming water from, yeah.
You know. There's not as much noise in their minds about what's this and what's right and what's wrong and how should it be and why is that wrong and why shouldn't it be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And that's why I'm always saying to parents when they're saying, oh my God, how can I tell my child that grandfather, granddaddy is really sick of cancer and might die in the next few weeks? Or how can I tell my children that we are divorcing, And I'm always giving the same answer. Just give them the truth, but in a simple and focused way. Just tell them, your granddaddy is really sick, he is old, and he has this disease called this, and old people, and especially with this kind of, they might even die in a few weeks. But you will be with us, we will deal with it as a family. You can always ask me and we will talk about it and you will visit your granddaddy. And if he is dying, then it might, and then you need to know what you believe. Then your granddaddy will still be with you. You just need to think about him and he will be there for you. Just tell the truth. What is your truth? Or how should you tell them that you were divorcing? Yes, really simple. Just sit down with them, both of you, and say, we love you so much. But our life together as a couple, it's not working. We are not happy. We are quarreling. So now we are going to have two households. There's nothing you did about it. Children often feel guilty. They did something wrong. It has nothing to do with you. We will still love you. You will both be in our hearts, in our homes, da-da-da-da-da. Just tell the truth. And never wait with it. They will always understand. We underestimate children all the time.
Constantly. And they know it.
They know it because they know everything. They are still so sensitive.
They're so much smarter than we give them credit for. It's unbelievable.
Sometimes
I have conversations with my goddaughter all the time.
Yeah.
I say, the adults, they don't think you know, don't do they? And she says, oh, no, they think I don't know anything.
Yeah.
No.
But it is like when people say to me, oh, I don't want to have my girl in an all-girls group because I don't think she's thinking about herself as a girl or somebody else as a boy. I don't think they're thinking about it. And then I have to say, sorry to bring you the bad news, but they do. They know everything about it. And they think about it. They always know. But you have your goddaughters. You are talking to them. I mean, respect them. They are human beings. They can quite understand everything.
Yes, completely. I mean, the conversations we have sometimes are hysterical.
But probably you have noticed that the only thing sometimes they cannot understand, that's a bullshit from grown-ups. Playing party games.
Yeah, they don't like it when the grown-ups lie or when the grown-ups aren't straightforward with them or hide things.
Yeah. Or when they say, oh yes, we will go to the swimming pool soon.
Soon. Yeah.
What is soon, excuse me?
Yeah. Or don't. You know, I love this idea of communication between children and adults and how we miscommunicate. Your my favorite saying you told me is the most common form of communication is miscommunication.
Yes, that's correct.
And it's in between parents and children and just children and adults generally and adults and adults. Yeah. It's so much miscommunication. Yeah. And especially now, like I've been watching my godchildren being homeschooled during this pandemic time.
Yeah.
And are the schools closed? Were they closed in Iceland or are they open?
They were partly closed, but every child went to school 2 or 3 days a week for maybe 2-3 hours. But we are back to normal completely. As a society, we dealt with the coronavirus and somehow we were lucky.
Yeah, somehow.
Yeah. Well, we did a lot of things, but...
yeah, you know, luck is opportunity meets preparation, I've heard said. But we're in England, in the United Kingdom, and in many places, we just, they went back to school a couple of weeks ago, the older kids. So my eldest godchild went back to school 2 to 3 days a week. And my youngest, who's 7, she's not in school. So both parents working full time still. And now have the kids at home, like it's happened. But it's been like this for most families for 3 months. And parents are going out of their minds trying to balance a full working schedule with suddenly children at home having to homeschool. And what do they do? They're like, they're doing their best, but...
If they're not going crazy, some of them might be. But I think it was so unrealistic. What I have been watching in the news and talking to people in UK and so on. And also when we had this decrease of days in school and so on, this is completely unrealistic expectation to homeschool children to work from home at the same time. And for the first time, maybe, as a family needed to take care of everything at the home, every minute, every hour of the day. Homes are not professional homes as they used to be. We are all outside of the house, outside of the building for the majority of the day. The kids are going to nurseries or schools where you are having a lot of people making educational and entertaining programs for them, working with them all day long, being their partners, and the kids having a lot of friends to choose from and playing. The parents, they are having their meals or going for a lunch at the daytime. They are all coming home at maybe 6 o'clock. And they have done the majority of the day. And back there, where they are usually in the nursery schools, workplace, are people even cleaning the houses for them. But then at home, meals, endless meals, cooking, cleaning endlessly, cleaning the house, nobody to do that for you. And then working full time and nobody to make the coffee for you. And then you should homeschool your children as well. How crazy can you be? This is so unrealistic. And I'm always, when I'm talking to parents, I'm saying the same again and again and again. I'm saying, please relax. Cut down and just core what you can do. What is realistic? Homeschooling, number one. Find time to be with your children, to talk to them, play with them, take the cards and do something that is entertaining for all of you. Have them with you, make some food. You cannot go out and play. We are lucky in Iceland, we have a lot of space, but try to make every day as satisfying as possible for your kids and for yourself. And you cannot work from home. How could you do a full work from your home? It's impossible. Having a home and children, that's enough for you. But then you can read with them and something like that. But decide, number one, what are you going to skip? And it's so stressful to have this idea, I need to deliver in my work as usually, and I need to take the responsibility for the education of my children. I would lose sleep.
A lot of people have lost quite a lot of sleep, I'd say.
Yeah.
I mean, the home, working from home, a lot of the parents I've talked to have really enjoyed the time with the family and really do not miss commuting to work, which would lose them maybe 2 hours of their day normally. So there's an element of working from home that they like, but if you then take the second full-time job of educating a child and put that on top of their already full-time job, plus the cleaning, plus the cooking, it's like the industrial revolution didn't only come to products and machinery and the way that we manufacture tables and glasses and chairs. It's come to the family and the school and the job. Yeah. We've outsourced everything.
We
have a cleaner to clean, a cook, you know, we do the cooking maybe or a restaurant cooks for us and we do the work and the schools take care of the kids.
Yeah. And the only thing left that you cannot and have not outsourced into this industrial society of ours, the only thing that you cannot outsource, that is taking care of your children. You as a parent are always responsible for their emotional upbringing, and you are the only person to teach them how a home should be. I mean, and then it doesn't matter if you're there awake for 3 hours or if you're there awake for you know, 18 hours or 16 hours or whatever. This is the only thing you have never outsourced, and you cannot outsource it. So that's why being there with your children, running a family, how to talk, how to make some food, how to prioritize. You are teaching them how to prioritize. What is number one? If your child is not happy, is bored, somehow cannot find something entertaining to do, what should you prioritize? Go to the computer, do your work, cook a really complicated meal, clean, do the laundry.
No, the child's well-being, the well-being of everybody.
Yeah. The well-being of the family, of all the people inside this house, that's the priority. Always their well-being.
Good to hear you say that.
No, and sometimes in the family, as a company, the family limited, sometimes it's the mother of the house. She is taking somehow care of everything and she is, so she feels the responsibility always that she is, I mean, it's her role to take care of the welfare, to plan what to do, to be ready, to think about things ahead. Sometimes both parents are really active, and I like it when homes are having more than just two parents and a child or something like that. I like bigger homes, and I like open homes when you're having guests over and people are working together in the home. I mean, you are coming to Iceland, you are coming to me and to my spouse and me, and you are coming and you are just part of the family. You are doing things we are doing, and our grandkids, they are here a lot, and you are playing with them. You know, all the human beings, we make a society every minute in the home. So you need to talk about it. The parents, they need to discuss it, and with the children, they also need to discuss it. How are we going to have this evening a rather nice one for all of us? What are we going to do, my friends?
Yeah, and where you let children choose and give input is so important.
Oh, yes. Because I mean, so often we are undermining not only their capacity and their understanding, we are undermining their interest and their strong will. I could talk about the strong will of children for hours and hours. you know.
Yeah, but I mean, we what do we think? We're going to tell kids what to do their whole lives, and then suddenly they're supposed to make decisions for themselves as adults? When do they get to train in their own decision-making process?
Yes. In schools,
I get
they
it.
Need to ask if they're allowed to go and pee. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, they are finished in university, 25 years old, and then the society is saying, oh, we need young, creative, independent people taking initiative and so on. No.
Can I get a hall pass, please?
But every minute in a house, being a part of family, you are responsible for the well-being of everybody. We all are.
I think we're all struggling with that, especially right now with the pandemic, especially being locked up for three months in our houses. Yeah. We are allowed to go outside for exercise and happen. We're very lucky in the UK.
Yeah.
Some countries haven't been able to do that at all. Yeah. But, we're even as individuals facing this idea of, well, today my well-being is suffering because we're in this crisis. Yeah. Nobody's really equipped to deal with or can explain or process on the spot.
Yeah.
And our well-being is not good. And so we're supposed to get through what, another working day? And lately I've been backing off on those days. I've been taking a walk on those days. Those days that are so hard to get through, I just have to stop. And this idea
and then,
of the bigger
Gabby, and then you are making the wise decision. You are deciding, you are having a choice meeting with yourself. You are saying to yourself, well, this is not the best day of my life. I cannot do whatever I want to do, but what can I do? How am I feeling? And how can I take responsibility for my well-being today? What can I do to feel better? And that we need to make that our priority.
Yeah, and that in the family too, when the kids are having a hard time not wanting to go to school.
Yes.
The eldest godchild, she does not want to go to school. She is having a really hard time with that.
She was out of her daily rhythm and going back now for 2 or maybe 3 days. And I know how to build a society in a school, how to build the atmosphere and so on. But then you are showing up some days, sometimes not. Maybe your best friend is not coming the same day as you are. And this is not part of your daily rhythm. And for children, that's so, so hard. So maybe the Scottish way of just keeping closed is not the worst.
I don't understand why we opened for 4 weeks if they thought that was going to give relief to parents who are working there. They're more insane than I thought they were. The decisions are being made by people who seem to have no grounding in what it's like to just have a life that you have to work for.
But then at least give people a choice.
Sorry?
Yeah, you can have a new choice meeting every moment of your life. I was talking to my 7-year-old granddaughter, and she was talking about feelings. And she was saying, but you cannot be happy always. You cannot always be happy and glad. I mean, that's not normal. There are so many other feelings. And then she said, but then you can, of course, you can make a choice. You maybe been really angry, but then maybe you need to feel the anger so it will go out of your heart or being sad of the situation. She was saying, you need to feel the feeling and talk about it so it will go away. Otherwise, it will just stay in my heart. But then I can find a new feeling. Maybe the feelings are just stars in the universe. And maybe they are all there for us and we can just pick them, but sometimes they come to us, but they will not be forever. And I will just write a little bit about it in my book. And then I will have a new feeling. But they have this simple way of thinking, okay, I'm sometimes feeling bad. Please admit it, talk about it, and then do something to make things better.
I think this is the single biggest tragedy that we rob our boys of, is the ability to be in touch with their feelings, have them, and how that's in conflict with our societal idea of masculinity is one of the most damaging things to society. I say rob men of their tears and the world cries instead.
Yeah, because their hearts will not leave them. The tears are not going away from their heart. They will sit there, and according to researches, people that cry every now and then when they're having a hard time, they have stronger hearts than people that do not cry. They tend more to have some kind of heart failure.
And also, I mean, you know, crying releases, it's the way that we purge the cortisol in our bodies, the stress hormones. Yeah. So it physically cleanses us as well. There's a biological reason for crying that's pro and positive.
And this, we, Gabi, we are always talking about nature, respecting nature, etc., etc. But then we do not even respect all the gifts from nature, like crying when you're feeling bad. So you will be able to let go and get all these physical reactions.
And this is why it is important to train in all of these qualities.
Yes.
And I just wanted to say, because this is actually going really well back into the idea of your schools, that in England, of course, they're not a stranger to single-sex schools, but the schools are segregated and the children never mix. But in your schools, the learning portion of the day is done in single-sex classrooms, but the playing portion of the day is done together. So they have this ebb and flow of apart together.
Yes, that's what I believe in. And I do not believe in only black and white. I do not believe in just good or evil. I do not believe in all girls' schools or all boys' schools. I believe in balance. And that's why we are having mixed settings in a way, but we are using the single sex method to give them new experience, to give them more than we could have done when they are together. And also think about it, Gabi. The boys' culture is still really harsh. The masculinity, we are still building up this masculine idea of not crying or being strong, being able always, never showing weakness, because then you are not playing by the book. We are still doing it, and in the old all boys schools, it was so harsh for the boys. It was so disciplined, such a negative surroundings, especially for boys with other interests and so on. But the girls, all the old girls' schools, they did well for girls because they were a compensation. They had strong women really wanting to make the girls strong and capable. But we need to mix. We need to meet up with respect and really doing something together. Not only being in the same room at the same time, but really showing respect and doing something together. That's what we need to do. But black and white, I mean, we always need this balance, but we should not be afraid of this old method of single gendered settings every now and then, because we know that we can give more experience to the girls when the boys are not there observing them, and vice versa. Not be afraid of the tool, even though it was overused and in a negative way, especially for the boys, for years and decades. Yes.
Well, look at the government of the United Kingdom, all successfully schooled in exactly that.
not blame the method for the wrong usage of it.
You know, I mean, this idea of not becoming like the boys as a girl, I really like this idea of not feeling that I have to become like the boys to lead. And I sort of started thinking about this as we were talking. And this whole idea of leaning in seems really off balance. I think what we need to do is stand up in what we are, you know, and what and how we see and how we relate and communicate and lead. It's not a weakness to listen. It's not a weakness to show emotion. No. It's not a weakness to be on above board with people.
The greatest courage of all is to dare to show emotions, is to make mistakes and know that they are not negative in a way. Women are so afraid of mistakes, you know. We know all about it. So we are training our children in trying things, sometimes doing things that we know that they cannot do, just to make the mistakes so we could just embrace it and say, oh, you were so daring. It was so great that you tried it. And it's the best thing in the world is to try something that you know that you cannot do exactly as you want to do it, but you have to try, and then you will practice and do more, because you can learn. But if you're never making mistakes, you will never learn anything.
This is true. This is actually photography in a nutshell. I'm constantly making mistakes. And sometimes those mistakes are the best things that have ever happened in my work.
Yes.
And
I,
it's more failure than success. I fail more often with photographs than I succeed. But I learn and I keep going and I keep trying and I keep, you know, I pay attention and I don't, you know, of course it hurts a little bit, and but I just keep getting up and trying again.
Yeah, because that's life. That's life. And life is full of everything.
All the stars in the sky.
I mean, you have to accept all of it. You have to accept all of it. And especially when we are grown up, it's a little bit different for children. They are gaining more and more experience, and they are getting better and better at everything. But after some age, after 18, 20, 22, nothing new will happen to you, even though you add a year to your life. Except you make a mistake. And you try something that's out of your comfort zone. Like you said, you need to fetch your courage, you know, from your gut. You need to fetch it. And then you will grow bigger. Then you will gain more strength and so on. But everything, when life is just good, going as normal, is not doing anything for you. Mm-hmm. We need to walk on the wall to learn when we are grown up.
Well, we're all being pushed against the wall in this pandemic. That's for sure.
We are really.
We're all really walking the wall right now. And I really hope that it does in the long run. I do think it will give back. I don't know that it's going to lead to this big change that people are hoping for in people. But I know that more people than ever before are really being pushed up against their own limits and pushed way out of their comfort zone. And are having to dig deep into their courage.
And we will grow.
Exactly.
We will grow. And do you know, Gabby, I have taken the decision for myself. I don't want to go back to my normal. That's my decision.
I'm averse to the word normal personally.
or to my
usual. I like the word usual.
Thank you. My usual life, always too busy, always with too little time for my friends and family, and not taking the time to do so many things I like to do because of work. I'm not going back to it.
Good.
And now I have started to learn carpentry.
I love it.
Gabby, I'm 62 years old with my 4 university degrees. And I decided to do something really giving me some experience of something brand new and just see what would happen to me. So that's my role today, being a carpentry student. Don't you think it's just wonderful?
I think it's brilliant. And I looked into Technoskolen when I was living in Iceland, as I said, and I wanted to look into the same program and wanted to do it. And I'm proud of you and envious and also excited. And I can't wait to see what you're making.
And now I'm waiting for you to come to Iceland so we can go into the lake, freezing cold, to swim.
Can't wait.
Yes.
Can't wait.
I learned that from you. So come over so we can challenge ourselves and grow.
Thank you for joining me. That was Magapala Olafsdottir for episode 6 of Stranger Curiosity. Please find links to Magapala's schools, websites, her podcast, which is mostly in Icelandic, but also sometimes in English, and more information in the show notes. You can also find this information on my website, www.gabriellemottola.com/strangercuriosity. If you'd ever like to get in touch with ideas or comments, you can write to me through my website or on strangers@gabriellemottola.com. If you have any questions that have come up as a result of this episode from Magapala, please feel welcome to write to me, and I will pass them on to her. I'll be back in a fortnight, so stay safe, and I hope you take time this week to follow your curiosity.